Well, today we will traffic through, if you will, about 5,000 people in worship here at Highland Park United Methodist Church. This is just one of nine services. We'll have nine different worship services on this campus, and we'll have an additional two on our East Dallas campus, in addition to all the people watching online. I say that to you because what we've discovered as a staff is that when you traffic 5,000 people through a building, you all tend to leave a lot of stuff behind. You leave out of here today, and we'll scour these pews, and there's no telling what you've lost and left. So this morning, I said, give me the box. Just the box. These aren't props. This is actually what's in the box. This is the kind of stuff you all leave behind. We've collected thousands of these. Thousands of these. It's an umbrella. If we strung all these together, we could cover the entire city of Dallas and keep it dry. Every Sunday, whether it's raining or not, somebody will leave an umbrella behind. And this is in the box. Look at this here. Shoes. Now, let me ask you, who goes to church with shoes on and leaves barefooted? Somebody leaves these in the aisle, and so we take them and gather them up, and then there's all kind of glasses in here. There's a wonderful pair of eyeglasses. Look here, Ray-Bans right here. Somebody left these. I could sell these on eBay today. $50, right? $50 I could probably get for these. I don't know whose these are. My son, I saw this. I'm excited about this. My son's turning 16. He's already asked. He said, Daddy, can I get a car? Problem solved. Here's an Audi. Right here. I do not know to who, which one of y'all this belongs. Somebody lost the keys to their Audi. And so this is what we do. Every week we go through and we get all the stuff. We gather it up and we put it here because we know at some point during this week, a light bulb's going to go off in your life and you're going to say, uh-oh, I lost my key. I lost my shoes, whatever. I lost. And so you're going to come back to the church and you're going to say, where's your lost and found? Exactly. And you're not going to say, do you have a lost and found? You're going to already come armed with the assumption that we have one clearly defined, centralized repository where everything that gets lost is placed. And you may not find what you've lost, but you know this is probably the best place to start. Right? Buildings are all like this. It's not just churches. If you go to the mall, they will have a lost and found. The airport, they have a lost and found. The grocery store, they have a lost and found. We expect that when we lose things in our life, somebody somewhere has been intentional enough to create one top of the mind. I don't have to think about it. They've got one place where they brought everything that's lost, and that's where I go. Now, this is why this is important. What do you do when you've lost yourself? When you're just a little bit lost, right? Maybe not literally in terms of geography, but maybe you're just lost, right? You're coming out of a divorce. And relationally, you're lost. Do you have one top of the mind, ready-made, I don't have to think about it, centralized repository where you think that's where I'm gonna go and start over and figure things out? What about employment? Some of you, the process of losing a job, right? And now you're a little bit lost career-wise. You don't know what you're going to do next. You don't know if you're going to find a job, what you should do. Maybe you should do something totally different. You're a little bit lost. Is there one place that you go when you're lost? I think about our children and their identity. Well, children are born and they don't know who they are or what they're supposed to be, and God has blessed them with unique gifts and graces. And I think about all these children that we just baptized, and there's going to be a day when they get lost. And I don't care who you are, and I don't care how sincere you are in your baptism vows, even God could not raise perfect children. You ever think about that? Where do they go when they're lost? I love this scripture. Luke 2, the only chance in the Bible we get a lens into the life of Jesus when he is a young boy, right? Preteen, he's 12 years old, the scripture says, and he gets lost. You know where he turns up? The local church. That's where I'm going. Jesus is lost, not for one, not for two, for 3 days. That's a long time to be without mom and dad, roaming the streets of Jerusalem. And they find him at the local church. Because in Jesus's mind, Jesus's heart, there's one centralized local place. I don't have to think about it. I'm lost. I don't know where mom and dad are, but that's okay. I'm going to the local church. I'm going to the temple. When you're lost, is the local church the first place that you think of to go to? Relationally, professionally, emotionally, spiritually. When you're lost, top of the mind, ready, I don't have to think about it. I need to show up to the local church. I may not find the answer I'm looking for, but that's probably a pretty good place to start. You know, ants are fascinating, these little ants. I was watching this show on ants, and they don't have a problem when they get lost. Ants walk in a straight line forever. And if there's an obstacle, they either go under it, over it, around it, because as it turns out, there's some mechanism inside the ant that has developed within them a prodigious capacity to know exactly where they are in respect to where they started and where they're headed. And if they have to go off course, they know where the line is. They come right back to the line. See, humans aren't like that. When we get lost, you know what we do? We go in circles. Science will show if you're in the desert and you're walking and suddenly you get lost and you don't have a relationship anymore to where you started or where you're headed, you know what you do? You don't just naturally know where the line is. You just go like this, around and around and around. What if there were one centralized, local, top of mind? I don't have to think about it. That's where I go to get back on the line. I love in these words, the local church, the temple, that's where Jesus went, but it was perplexing to his parents because when they finally find him and they see him in the temple, having now found him, the scripture says they were astonished. You know what that means? We didn't expect to find you here. We've made a journey to Jerusalem. We'll do everything in our power to get there to the temple, but we didn't expect to find you here. See, sometimes churches are so compartmentalized, you find one for mom and dad, but it's not the one for the kids. Or you find one that's so dynamic for children, but mom and dad are too sophisticated and too smart and too intelligent. And so very seldom do you find a church that the whole family loves, where one party or the other is not astonished to see the other there. And when they question their little boy Jesus, they say, wait a minute, how'd you end up here in the local church? And Jesus says, did you not know? It's like the first instance in history where a teenager says, duh, to his parents, right? Duh, this is where I'm going when I get lost. So as we wrap our series today, on family ministry. And the reason we're talking about family ministry, and we have been, is not because I believe that all of you are naturally at home today with kids under a roof, and you're all 33 with 2.5 kids, and you're in the middle of family ministry. No, we don't believe that. What we do believe is that the single greatest task we have as a church is to pass down faithfully and effectively the gospel of Jesus Christ to the next generation. That's the biggest and most important task we have. We have a lot of tasks. They're all important. That's the most. How do we reduce generation loss and share with our children the love of Christ? In fact, it's so important, not only our children, but our children's children, their children, even generations yet to be born. And part of that is we want to create a church that the whole family can love. And in this scripture, it is fascinating to me. There's a lot of heroes in this story, I suppose. Mary and Joseph are heroes because they lost their children, and now they've done everything in their power, and they've doubled back, and they've made the trek to Jerusalem, and they find their kids, right? Jesus. We often read this story through Jesus' eyes. How remarkable is it that a 12-year-old would be in the local church conversing with the priests, teaching them more than they are teaching him? Aha, Jesus must be the hero. Probably all heroes, but there's an unsung hero, and that's whoever it is that behind the scenes that made the temple so compelling, so dynamic, that that's where a 12-year-old boy would seek to show up when he's lost. That's the heroes. The scripture doesn't tell us who did that. I don't know what kind of programs they had. I don't know what kind of youth leaders they had. All I know is that when a 12-year-old boy turned up lost, top of the mind, I don't have to think about it. I'm headed to the local church. We have those people on our staff that work tirelessly to create an environment that the whole family can love. And so I've asked today to help close our series out for Reverend Matt Tuggle. He is our Director of Family Ministries here at Highland Park, and I've asked him to share with you a little bit about how we go about being hyper-intentional at creating a church where neither the kids nor mom and dad ever have to be astonished to see the other. So Matt, if you want to join us and tell us a little bit about the great work that you all have going on.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for this opportunity. Yeah, as Paul's been saying, how incredible would it be if every time a 12-year-old was lost in our community, either literally or metaphorically, if the first place they showed up was the local church? How incredible would that be? And we want to be that kind of church. Now, we hope other churches will be that kind of church too, but we hope to be that kind of church. The kind of church where teenagers or children, when they don't know where else to go, when they're driving around and they're overwhelmed with something, and they don't know where else to turn, and maybe they're not quite ready to tell their parents yet, or maybe they don't have parents that they feel comfortable talking to, if the first place that they turn to is somebody at the church. As Paul said, our greatest task is to pass the faith down to the next generation. The Apostle Paul says at the beginning of 1 Corinthians 15, he says, "What was given to me, I now pass on to you as of first importance." And then he lays out the gospel. As of first importance, what I want to do is I want to give you the truth of who Jesus is. And he passed it on to a generation of Christians, who passed it on to another generation of Christians. And eventually it made it to the generation before you, and somebody, likely a group of people, shared that truth with you. And now that truth is in our hands. And it's our time to pass it to the next generation behind us. And if it's going to make it to the next generation, then we will have to be more intentional than any generation before us with our plan for passing the faith down. It is unlikely that it will just happen without a plan. It's less likely than it's ever been before in the history of our country that our kids will graduate from high school, go to college, and meet a college professor who introduces them to the gospel. It's likely not going to happen. It's likely not going to happen that our son is going to get to be 25 and join a corporation and come to know Christ through a Bible study at his work. It's probably not going to happen. If the next generation is going to come to know Christ, it's likely going to happen while they're in elementary school, middle school, or high school. What I love about this church is that this church wants to be obsessed with capturing the hearts and the minds of middle schoolers and high schoolers and elementary school kids for the gospel of Jesus. And what you got when you came in, hopefully, and if you didn't, make sure you get one on the way out, is a little booklet, and this is our plan. I mean, essentially what this is for the parents who were up here just a few moments ago with your kids being baptized. What this is what we want to put in your hand and say, this is your church's plan for how we want to partner with you to raise your kids in the Christian faith for the next 18 years. This is what our plan is. Now, some of you don't have kids living under your roof. This is still a plan for you. Because it may not be about your kids as in the kids living in your house, but it is about your kids as in the kids that you are a part of this family with, this church family. Maybe it's not going to help your kids because your kids are grown, but it is going to help your kids as in the other kids that go to this church, your family here. So I'm going to encourage you to turn to the first page here. It's a couple in, but it has a one right there. And this is our vision. This is what our plan is. And I just want to tell you very briefly today about the basics of this plan. You know, lots of people have different plans for how they'll pass the faith down to the next generation. What some people do is they say, the way that my kids are going to become Christians is, well, I was a Christian, and they're going to be a Christian because I was. They're going to be a Christian because I'm going to make them come to church. I'm going to put them in a certain kind of school. I'm going to make them do devotionals at night. They're going to be a Christian because I'm going to tell them to be a Christian. Look, that plan doesn't always work. Now, the redeeming quality of that plan is that it ensures that they'll encounter the gospel, but it doesn't ensure that they're going to connect with it. But then the opposite end of the spectrum is not true either. Some of us grew up with that model, so what we say is, hey, we're not going to put any pressure on them at all, and we're going to support our kids no matter what they believe. But the problem with that is that doesn't ensure that they're going to encounter the gospel. What I want to suggest is that we don't have to be on one of those extremes. It's not true that either we shove it down their throats or we totally back off, but there's a middle of the road. And it's a middle of the road that all parents naturally learn within the first 2 weeks of being a parent. You see, within the first 2 weeks of being a parent, At some point, likely about 2 a.m. in the morning, what you realize is one of the great truths of parenting, and that is that you can't make your kids do anything. Namely, you can't make them go to sleep, right? But you also realize very quickly, if you're a good parent, and I know that all of you are or were or will be, if you're a good parent, you realize, I can't make my kid go to sleep, but I can create an environment where sleep is more likely to happen. Just because I can't make him go to sleep doesn't mean that I might as well turn the TV on, the lights on, and do my weekly blending, right? We can't make the kid go to sleep, but we can create an environment where sleep is more likely to happen. We cannot make the next generation grow up to be disciples of Jesus. But we can create an environment where discipleship is more likely to happen. And what you'll see here is these are the three marks of an environment that we believe fosters discipleship. And it's based on the environment that Jesus grew up in that Paul has been walking us through in the service. It doesn't guarantee that kids will grow up to be disciples of Jesus, but if they have these three things, it raises the likelihood. A family that practices the faith together. Note that we don't say a perfect family. You don't have to be a perfect family. But a family that practices the faith together. Number two is a community of trustworthy family and friends. We need other adults in our kids' lives that are telling them the same things that we're telling them at home. And three is a church, like Paul said, that the whole family can love. We want to be a church that doesn't just say, hey, you've got to do this at home, but we want to say this is a place that you can bring your kids, and we believe that here that they will grow in their relationship with Christ also. That's our vision. Our vision is to see the home, to see your home and your church partner together to create environments that foster discipleship. And I think that this is a really good vision. I mean, if you can't get excited about seeing this happen in the next 3 years, I don't know what you're going to get excited about. This is a really good vision. But if all you have is a vision and you don't have a plan, it doesn't really matter. Because if we just put this on paper and hope that it happens, it's probably not going to. So we've also got a strategy. It's a simple fourfold strategy, and I just want to walk quickly through what those four things are. I think you're going to want to know what they are. The first bit of our strategy is that we want to resource parents. We know that it is difficult to raise your kids in general, much less to raise them in the Christian faith. It's something that I run into. I want desperately for my son Boyd and my son Charlie to grow up to be deeply devoted followers of Jesus Christ. And some days, Amy and I do a great job with that. Other days, it's 7 o'clock at night, our whole house is falling apart, it seems like everybody's crying, and I don't know what to do. I need somebody to help me know how to navigate this. So what we've done is we've created what we call phase cards. You should have gotten these a few weeks ago if you were here. If not, they're floating around the church. I hope that you'll grab these. And what the phase cards are is they're cards that outline each of the phases that your child will go through up until college. This one here, the green one, is for middle school. It has a fun little phrase on the front. This is what that one says. Middle school, the phase where popularity matters, is measured in likes and followers, and a young teenager desperately wants to know who really likes me. And then on the back, it has three things that if you have a middle schooler, either as a child or a grandchild, we suggest you do these three things. We suggest that you have a plan to serve together regularly. We suggest that you make small group community a priority. And we suggest that you attend either as a family or have your kid attend a mission trip. They do those three things. No guarantee they're going to grow up to be a disciple of Jesus. But we think that it increases the likelihood. We want to be intentional about resourcing parents to help raise the kids in the Christian faith. I don't know about you, but when there's something around my house that I don't know how to do, I no longer reference a book. I've got these piles of books in my garage, literally collecting dust that my dad gave me when I became an adult about how to fix things around the house. I never reference them. What do I do when I need to know how to fix a leaky faucet and I can't figure it out on my own? YouTube. And you know what video I watch? The shortest one on there, right? So what we've done is we've created short 2 to 3 minute videos that we've put on our website called DDIY videos, don't do it yourself videos, that answer questions that we know that parents are asking. For example, one of them is Walt Markham answering the question, what do I do when my son or daughter asks me a question that I don't know the answer to? Don't you want to know what Walt thinks about that? Just go to our website and Google DDIY and it'll pull up his answer. We want to be intentional about resourcing parents to help you raise your kids in the Christian faith at home. The second thing that we want to do is we want to help connect families to community. You should know this. This is an incredible statistic. This year, this calendar year, our church will start over 30 new Sunday school classes and small groups for adults. Over 30 new ones. We also have a vibrant life group ministry. It's a small group ministry for middle schoolers and high schoolers that's larger than it has ever been in the history of our church. And in HPUMC Kids, they're teaching our kids from an early age what it means to sit in a circle and to talk in a small group environment. Add those three things to the fact that we have an incredible special needs ministry, and I'm proud to say that I work at a church, and you should be proud to say that you attend a church where any family in this community can come to this church and find a place for everybody in their family, no matter what their family's like, no matter what the makeup is, no matter what they've been through, they can find community here. We want to resource parents to practice the faith at home, and we want to help families to find community. The third thing that we want to do is that we want to invest in excellent age-level ministry. Because we don't just want to say, here's how you can do it at home, and here are some ways that you can find community. We also want to be able to say, you can send your kids here, and they can learn about the faith here at the church. So we want to invest in excellent children's ministries, excellent confirmation ministry, excellent middle school and high school ministry. And the truth is, we've done that for a long time here at this church. But what Paul is challenging us to do is to take it to a whole new level, to become even better at it, to become even more intentional than we've ever been. One of the ways that we're becoming intentional about it is if you turn to the centerfold in your packet, you'll see this black page with six yellow circles. And what six circles? And what you'll notice is that each of those represents one of the phases of our family ministry and then up into college. Our phases of family ministry are now intentional about working together. And here's what I mean by that. We've identified five areas that we feel like teenagers need to be equipped in before they go off to college, before they go off to the workforce, or before they go off into the military. Before they enter what we call the 13th grade, there are five areas that we want them to be equipped and empowered in. We want them to be equipped and empowered in scripture, in prayer, in worship, in community, and in serving others. So again, if we want them to have those tools in their toolbox when they go off to school, then we want to be intentional about how we're preparing them for those things. So here's an example with scripture. By the time they get to college, here's what our hope. Our hope is that the 13th grader will read scripture devotionally and will study it in community. Over the last month, we've sent dozens of students that came through this church into college, hundreds of them into college. And what our hope is that while they're in college, this first month, that they're studying scripture in community and they're reading it devotionally. That's how we evaluate how our youth ministry is doing. Here's the deal. You think it's unfair or it's difficult how you're evaluated at work? How I'm evaluated is based on what college freshmen do their first week of college, right? How's that? Okay? But what we're evaluating ourselves on is, do they read scripture devotionally, and are they studying it in community along with the four other areas? If we want them to do that when they get to college, then we got to have a plan all along. So here's the deal. If your kid is in the nursery, or if your kid is in preschool today in this first little circle, here's what's happening. They're hearing the truths and the stories of Scripture. Then when they get to elementary school, they learn the truths and the stories of Scripture. When they get to confirmation, they learn about the history of the Bible and they learn about why it's the foundation for our faith. When they get to middle school, we encourage them to develop a plan to read the Scripture devotionally. When they get to high school, we help them to begin to navigate their questions about faith and their questions about life through the lens of the Scripture. Because we believe that if we do each of those things, by the time they get to the 13th grade, then they'll read the Scripture devotionally and they'll read it in community. That's what our plan is. The last part of our strategy is that we want to be prepared to walk through family's toughest moments. Here's the difficult reality. We will have families this year in our church that face tragedy, that have no idea that that tragedy is coming. It could be my family. There are things that your family may walk through this year that you are not yet ready to walk through. We want to be a church that's prepared to walk through that with you. We want to be a church that's prepared to walk through that with you if it's an issue around substance use or abuse, if it's an issue around domestic violence or sexual abuse. We want to be a church that's ready to walk through issues of mental illness with you. We want to be a church that's ready to walk through issues of relationship and how do I talk to my middle schooler about sexuality. We want to be a church that's ready to walk through those tough moments with you. So we've got somebody on staff, her full-time job as of just a few months ago, is to help this church be the best that we can be at walking through issues of domestic violence and abuse with the families of this church. Her name's Hillary Owen. Here's her job. Her job is to walk through that with your family if that's something that you're experiencing. Her job is to put policies and procedures into place in this church to make it as safe as it can be. Her job is to train the staff so that we can walk through that also. We've got a volunteer who's just stepped up. She's gonna donate her time many hours a week to do the same thing when it comes to substance use and abuse. Her name's Lisa Kroenke. Lisa Kroenke will be a part of our team so that she can walk through issues of substance use and abuse with your family and train our staff on how to handle that. We want to be a church that is ready to walk through your toughest times with you. Because here's the thing. If we do all four of those things, it does not guarantee that your kids will grow up in the faith. It doesn't guarantee that your kids will love this church and that you will too. But I think that it raises the likelihood that you will. We want to do those four things. And ultimately, it's not about the kind of church that we want to be. But here's what it's about. When that 12-year-old comes to our church, and they're nervous and they don't know exactly what they're going to find, we believe that if they find here adults and peers that love them no matter what they've gone through, a place where they find both grace but also accountability. We believe that if they come here and they find adults and peers that love them and that care about them and that want the best for them, that when they find a church that loves them, that they'll look beyond the church and that they'll also find the God that this church worships. And that's how we as a church, we as individuals, can pass the faith down to the next generation. By being a place that loves the next generation, a safe place for them to come, to experience truth. And I gotta tell you, if you have kids in your home, you ought to be excited about this. If you don't have kids in your home, you ought to be excited about this. Because God might be calling you, even if you don't have kids in your home, to find kids here that you're pouring into weekly. I hope that you'll join us on this journey to being a church that the whole family can love and being intentional about how we've passed the faith down to the next generation. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Matt, thank you. Let me tell you, this gentleman right here is one of the brightest up-and-coming young, not only preachers, but leaders in the United Methodist Church. He has a service every week at 11 o'clock right here called the Chapel. If any of you want to ever check it out, he is terrific. And I'm so proud of the work that Matt and his entire staff are doing so that we can tackle the biggest task that we have in passing down the faith to the next generation.